Alright, fucking God help us on this one. Love you so much!
Welcome to the unofficial King Gizzard podcast, the show about the best band in the world, It's 4 a.m. Pacific time on Friday, October 24th. I'm Captain Shipwreck.
And I'm a professor. You can call me Professor John P. Weatherclock if you're not into the whole brevity thing. Today, we're going to be talking about a show that was kind of a surprise because it was only a week ahead of time that Giz announced this rave set in Melbourne in a public square for free. And it was their first rave show in over a year. The last one was San Francisco, November 24.
It was awesome. Also, by the way, is that preempting what you wanted to say today?
We'll see.
Okay, fair enough. Do you have a lyric for the episode?
I do have a lyric for the episode, and it's something from the show. It was one of the debuts. I hope I can teach you how to be mostly happy. Hope you don't let the world crush you, for it is beautiful out there, and there's a lot to see. That's from Butterfly 3000.
Oh, that's wonderful. I think like them, and I speak like them. 666 in a sequence. Same person, similar service. Satan. Saint Nick. Season's greetings.
I'm sorry, is that from Torture Chamber?
Black Market Bargain is, in theory, what the song is called that doesn't yet exist that was included just near Torture Chamber amidst the Grim Reaper.
Yeah, we got to get into that. That was crazy, and we have a lot of things to say about that. So this show was a hometown show, which the band promoted more than usual. They went on a couple of radio, I think we just call them podcasts now. They went on a couple radio shows and talked about it. And I, one of them was good and one of them was not. And the one with Stu and Joey was better because the interviewers were asking questions. And a couple of things I thought were interesting that Stu and Joey said. Stu said when he's talking about Nathan and playing the modular synth, and he said, the feeling was like when I first learned to play guitar, I kind of chased that. And later in the episode, he said, we're chasing the dragon of things that would make us motivated or scared, which is one of the several times the band said they were scared about playing this show.
Right. Or a show like this show.
Yeah. And then Joey said, our studio looks like a crime scene. We're nervous for tomorrow. And I think I understand why it would be scary to do this rave set. They're going to do a whole, you know, a bunch in Europe. This was the first one in a year. And also, I keep thinking about the hometown thing because there's probably a lot of people there that have been seeing this band since they were like a surf rock, psychedelic, weird party band. And if you look at some of those old videos of them from like 2010, you see it looks like the acid test from the 60s, and it's just a wild party. And then to see what they're doing now, like, I wonder how some of the people react to that stuff.
This looked like a test of some other drug at a wild party.
Like a flu vaccine?
Not acid, right, but like, right, Nasonex, or, right, COVID-X, or the like. What did you think about the venue, or what you could see of the scene?
It looked like a big public square, like fairly modern. I don't remember seeing that when I was in Melbourne in 2019. The stage looked low. I don't know, like someone on the KGATLW subreddit said that there were about 10,000 people there. So the view could not have been good.
Right. It was cool looking, I think. And there were lights in the background. I guess there's some sort of art center there in the square that had these cool neon lights outside that went well with the lighting of the show. I think some people online also suggested that being there, you could see more of Jason Galea's screen effects than we could, which would have been cool.
Was there a screen?
Yeah, there was a screen. At least beforehand, the screen showed Juicy's album art, show art of a big, what, like Nathan Trojan horse looking?
Oh, yeah. That was cool. Yeah. The poster art was pretty neat. And he used like some late 90s techno rave font for the text. It looked very much like something I would have seen in 1999.
Yeah, I had mixed feelings about having less crowd noise on the recording. I shouldn't want that, I feel like, but I do like to hear the crowd get worked up. I want a clean recording, and I think we got more of a clean recording, but some part of me likes the feeling as if I'm with a bunch of people, the validation of being with a bunch of vicarious friends out there in Melbourne, and you couldn't hear the crowd much. And then the videos that I saw online from the crowd, it seemed pretty wild. People were having a wild time, but it was hard to get that sense, I thought, a little bit from the stream.
A totally different. I mean, the people running the stream might not have been the normal people. I don't really know. Probably not.
Right. Yeah, not sure.
But we're fucking grateful to have it and grateful that,
oh my God,
you know, does a free stream and it's still available. You can still watch it. And if you haven't already, you shouldn't be listening to us right now.
That's right. Maybe in either case, if you know what's good for you.
Good point. But yeah, that's a good point. If you've seen it, what are you doing here?
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, I think I want this. I think it's worth saying that there are other good podcasts out there, and that what we are, at least at the moment, setting out to do is share the shows that just happened and talk about them together, because I want that. I want to talk to someone about what just happened. And my wife doesn't care. My kid doesn't care. My cat is more interested, but not interested enough. And so we have each other, but anyone who wants us, I'm sorry, we're here. You have a headline?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I feel like what we're trying to do is just fill a gap in our own lives. And if anyone else wants to listen, which they shouldn't, but if they do, here we are. My headline is, we've only just begun.
Yeah, right. Tip of the iceberg.
Tip of my tiny prick. Yeah.
Tip of the iceberg to you.
I think that, like I said, they haven't done one of these in a year. They're about to do a bunch of them. And I think we've talked about this elsewhere, which is if they're going to do several rave shows in a row, they have to either debut some stuff or convert some stuff or both. And that is terrifying for them. And I think they also don't know how the crowds are going to react. I didn't know how I was going to react myself.
My headline is bring your big black bucket of patch cables. It turns out King Giz likes to try new things.
I like that.
And they tried a lot of new things.
And I did notice that bucket for the first time ever.
Yeah, it's awesome.
There's a bucket in front of Nathan that Stu was pulling from.
I want one of those. I don't need the modular synth, just a bucket of cables.
Well, Hanukkah's coming up.
Thank you in advance.
No modular synth, just the cables.
That's fine. I don't know what to do with them anyway. So just to have them, hang them on my Giz altar.
Oh,
Giz altar. The rock of Giz altar.
What? Okay, I want to talk the drip of the day, which of course is where we talk about who's wearing the best clothes. As usual, is a little reflective of the theme in some ways, because this was interesting. These dudes were casual. Like, I've never seen Stu wear like a long sleeve fleece on stage, and maybe not even, no, he's more, I've seen him wear jeans. But it was a hometown thing. The dudes were chill. Both Lukey and Joey were wearing Palestine sports jerseys, but those are not my drip of the day winners. Mine goes to Ambrose because he got a haircut and he was wearing white painter's pants and a denim jacket and a white undershirt.
I couldn't quite identify the jacket that Luke came out wearing, but it was creating a nice blacklight effect, and I wanted to see more of the details. He also didn't quite get my drip of the day, nor was the fact that Cavs seemed to be dressed as Cookie for Halloween with a belt and tucked in shirt.
Yes, which unusual.
I thought was wonderful. But my drip of the day goes to Stu for not wearing a hat at Nathan.
Sunglasses at times.
Sometimes.
What does it mean?
I don't know what it means. Then he had those cool green shoes. I liked the jeans. I don't know if I can think of a stream where I got to watch him shake his butt so much
Well, and I have a later note on that. Ambrose got involved at one point.
He did.
In yeah. Stu's butt.
Stu had these cool green shoes. What is it? Kariuma?
They were Kariumas.
Someone on the internet said that those are made by Nazi slave children and we shouldn't like them. So I don't know how to feel about that. He may not know. That's my understanding. So that makes it okay?
Or the children have Nazi slaves.
Who are also children who make shoes. And I think that's all tied up in the Church of the Latter-day Scientologists.
That's it. Kariumas are made in Brazil. I used to own a bunch, and they fell apart pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, fuck them. I'm a big fan of robot banter, so I would just like to say that Stu's words going into the show were, "This one's going to be extra freaky for you."
I didn't catch that. I did catch Hometown Show, We're Scared by Joey.
Why should they be scared by Joey?
That's a good point. Because of the children.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Good. Set list?
Set list. As usual, we're going through the set list as written on KGLW.net. Thank you, everyone on there, for your service. We love you so much.
We love you so much. Really, really do. I know we say that every night, but we fucking love you so much.
I am saluting you, as you can see on your recording if you stare closely.
And you're the captain, not me.
Right. I'm not saluting you. I'm saluting all those who died to make this set list possible for us.
Okay. So the show started with a silver cord. So
much of it.
Stu said in one of those interviews that they were going to start the show slowly and build up. And boy, they did.
Yeah.
The silver cord was super chill at the beginning. And this is something that I want to talk about, which is type 2 jamming.
Oh, my.
So type 2 jamming is a kind of improvisation where a band will leave the bounds of a song. A song usually has a chord structure and at least a key. And type 2 jamming, which is a word from the jam band world, means that the band has like left the structure. Sometimes they even change key and they're just going off in a new place. Type 1 jamming is where they stay in that mode, which is usually what Giz does, except like these Nathan sets and shows, like they go type 2 faster and for longer than any time they do that with guitars. And I think that is, what does it mean? It's very interesting. Maybe they feel freer because they're not their normal instruments, or maybe they don't know how to do type 1 with Nathan. I don't know.
It's not even clear sometimes that the song format has the sound that we would associate with that song, except for lyrics. It seems like they're playing in and around the theme of songs we know a lot of the time, more than they're playing versions of the songs that we know exactly as we know them.
That's a good point. Yeah, especially with the non-electronic stuff. But even the silver chord, like it was just out there almost immediately.
It was not complete, right? It was a silver cord light.
My favorite cigarette.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I smoked those in college. I didn't go to college, but I went to a college just to smoke those.
Silver cord lights.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely. Stu was doing a lot of visual directing, I noticed from the beginning. Pointing to people, having them do this and that. I'm surprised he wasn't using the silent mic.
Sometimes it seemed, I couldn't tell if people were using the silent mic or there was a problem in the stream. We may or may not talk about it later, but Ambi made a series of announcements to the crowd that are lost to history. Or he was talking to the band. I'm not sure, but it seemed his face was pointed at the crowd for an extended discussion of some kind. But that's not uncommon to Ambi audio recordings.
No, he's very social and he prefers not to have a mic on him. Honestly, if I were him, I would prefer some things not be recorded either.
Kepler 22B.
Yeah, Kepler 22B from Silver Chord. I really appreciated that Ambrose got on the congas at the beginning of that song. He played a lot of those.
It was a nice transition. And it's hard to tell in these songs when the transition is happening, but his physical movement to Ice Station Conga clearly delineated that they had entered a different place. And then Lukey got on the bass as well. And his bass line is so great in this song. And I really like these combinations. We got a lot of different combinations of Nathan and various instruments. And I don't want to want things in the world of Giz, because whatever they do tends to work out for me. I trust them to handle it. But I think that what I want is more of these combinations of Nathan and guitar and congas and flute and bass, and then surprise me with Nathan as an element of a greater soundscape.
Yeah, we experiment, keep doing things. With that said, having said that, I thought they might have lost the thread a little bit during Kepler. I thought there were some lulls that were unintentional, which is fine. And like, that's probably the most critical thing I've ever said about the band. Except for
they were still moving slower there. Yeah, right. The shoes. I don't understand why he would do that. But I guess it gives him something to give up later. And I felt like they were still building. They were sort of on a seeking mission for whatever the groove was at this point before things started to pick up. And I thought they very much did. Of transitioning from here into Gilgamesh.
In Gilgamesh, Gilgamesh.
In Gilgamesh.
Ambrose was audible.
Ancient Yiddish story.
I thought Ambrose's microphone was almost perfect. Still too low.
Yeah, hard as fuck. It was good. Gilgamesh was gnarly, and there were so many new Nathan sounds that I hadn't heard before.
Yeah, I'm hearing stuff. I heard stuff in this set that sounds that I recognize from Bullant, which is Joey's.
Oh, sure.
You know, side DJ gig. Bullant, one word.
Is it Bullant? It is.
And I noticed that during the stream in Gilgamesh, someone had a sign on the rail that said, "We called in sick to be here," which maybe you shouldn't make a sign of. For a free public stream.
Yeah, and they picked it up. I mean, they had it up even towards the end of the show. I admired their gumption. They were committed to the bit. And later in the set, they were holding it up. I could see them reinitiating their commitment to it. So they decided that was an important part of their performance.
You know,
I respect it.
Like, sabotaging your career is a real thing that people do. Maybe they're like, you know, they want to go on Europe tour and they want a real excuse. I wouldn't blame them.
I guess they work nights.
Possibly. Maybe they work for the stream team.
Right, exactly. Uh-oh. Stu's going to know.
You know, I was thinking when I was watching Gilgamesh and listening to it that I wonder if this kind of improvisation demands more attention from the band. Because either the instruments are unfamiliar, but it just seemed like they were focusing so much on what they were doing and listening so closely. Maybe because they just can't walk around like they can with guitars. I don't know.
That was another thing that Joey said in the interview that I appreciated. Triple R, that was the is it a radio station? That was the good interview with Joey and Stu. That they felt so challenged going into the orchestra shows and having to play charts and such. But then when they circled back to do rock shows again, he remembered how hard the rock shows are because they're always going to a different place and they can barely remember the name of songs sometimes that they have to play. And so, again, I think they like it to be hard. They like to make sure that they're challenging themselves. And that's very rewarding for us all.
Yeah, we're chasing the dragon of the thing that would make us motivated or scared. That was the Triple R 102.7 FM Melbourne Independent Radio.
That's what I was going to say.
Gilgamesh led into Set. And this is honestly where I think things took off. This is where I think things got really good. And that's also where I noticed the bucket of patch cables for the first time. I don't know where the cables have been before. I can only guess they were in various drag dresses.
Probably.
Being hidden, but we'll never know.
Yeah, there was like a xylophone-sounding intro into set that I loved, and indeed, they were really starting to haul ass by then. They said something maybe also in the RRRW1. That the BPMs they were trying to reach a certain, you know what, it might have been the other guy, the other interview that we didn't enjoy as much, but that there's something about trying to get the BPMs up. Do you think they have like a BPM-o-meter or something that they're all trying to follow, and they're ramping it up as they go, and they have some targets at different points in the show?
They have some key performance indicators, I believe, are they called. But no, I was a couple of things. So I was watching Stu point at look at Cabs and then point up in the air and bring would all bring the tempo up together. And I did clock at by the end of the show. Sorry, actually, by the end of Butterfly, they were up to how many BPMs? 188 beats per minute, which is almost undanceable. Wow.
I have no idea what that is. Oh, I see.
Yeah, 188 beats per minute is very fast, and you almost can't dance to it.
You can't stop me. I saw the camera had a shot of Cavs fiddling. He's got a new, apparently, little drummy device back there that he's been forced to use. And it looked embarrassed. He looked like a child being caught playing with his drum machine. He is such a drum machine. I don't know how he does it. He's so consistent and steady, and drum machines don't sound like live drummers, and live drummers don't sound like drum machines unless this one wants to, in which case he does.
I don't know how he does it, and as a non-drummer, I don't, I mean, I drum on my children's heads sometime.
It's important.
And it sounds good. It's good for, it builds like a nice thick layer around their brains, which everyone needs. But I don't know what the challenges are that he's facing with a Nathan next to him. Maybe he feels freer. Maybe it's easier for him. I don't know. Will you ask him?
I will. I'm sorry. I'm sending that email right now. And oh look. And no reply. There was nice footage on the Reddits of the crowd during this song that just made me really happy. People just seemed wild and delighted and a wonderful party that I would love to have been present for. I appreciated, again, this multi-instrumental thing that I'm into, Ambi crouching from the saxophone cave. I think maybe he's adjusting his mix down there, but he has a tendency to play the saxophone from a crouching position a lot of the time and play with his levels. Sometimes I maybe wish he would do that more when he's singing.
Right. What? Oh, yes. I don't know. It might be the effects. It looks like he's dealing with pedals. Crouching saxophone. Crouching saxophone, hidden harmonica will be the name of his biography that I will be writing.
That's good. Totally authorized in this case.
I noticed also that for the first time that there were like color charts that they had printed out.
Yeah. What is that?
I assume it's telling them what all the ghosts in the machines do.
Who knew you had to be able to use spreadsheets to operate a modular synth?
I guess I would have guessed that. I mean, if you had to, yeah, that makes sense now.
That's it, right? There's some sort of a multicolored pivot table involved, and they each had one, or some of them had some of them, or something.
And now we know why everything was so scary for them. Spreadsheets.
Yeah. They didn't throw any of those into the crowd that I'm aware of. I didn't see any of those pop up later.
No, those are laminated. They keep those. Mm. Those are the same from show to show.
Talking about them polar bears, Cookie?
Oh, yeah.
And that sound means it's time for Cookie Watch. Of course, Cookie Watch is a registered trademark of Kraft Nabisco, a wholly owned subsidiary of Mondelez Industries.
You can't be pronouncing that correctly.
Mondelez or Kraft?
Cookie Watch. Cookie Watch.
The man is impeccable. He was wearing what I will call a Australian tuxedo, which is light acid wash denim jeans and shirt.
Some of the time. The shirt left eventually.
He was wearing New Balance shoes, not these horrific Kariumas.
God, they look so comfortable.
Thank you to our sponsor, Kariuma, by the way.
Nazi children.
Cookie Watch.
Nazi children, so fuck off.
This brings up an interesting question that I've often wondered the answer to, which is Cookie the tallest member of the band? We know it's not Joey, and I don't think it's Stu. Help. Every photo I see of the other four, it looks like someone else is the tallest.
Can't be the shrimp beast. It's hard to tell. The mustaches on Joey and Ambie are, I think, what would be, we would have called canonically a porn stash back in the day. I'm not sure if that's the proper nomenclature anymore, but Cookie's got this full push broom or near push broom, sort of a hand broom, that it may make him look taller because there's just more.
That's what it is. It's like vertical lines.
Exactly right. That's why I wear them, so that I can look like my mustache is taller.
Yeah, cooked Craig.
So, Joe Jam, all caps, J-A-M. No one would have thought that this was a different song, a new song, unless it had been on the band's actual set list. What? Joe Jam?
Maybe. I mean, it was a very different type of melody than anything else they played. It did sound distinctive. I also probably wouldn't have known and would have taken it for a type 2 jam myself, but it didn't sound like anything else to me.
Yeah, Ambrose was playing sax and then congas. It was chiller. It was in G, and then it was just a vamp in G, and then they did like a 1-5-4, like a G-D-C thing for a while. But I never would have guessed this was a song. What is the... Do you think Joe is Joey?
I hope so. It makes sense since he is also the Blant. And the lyrics, apparently, to the song are... Sydney ain't got shit on this. Fuck Sydney. Am I right?
I was surprised to hear that from them, but yeah.
Well, there are three major cities in all of Australia.
Major is being awfully kind to them. There's not a
it
single
big.
One, actually.
Melbourne looked big.
No, Melbourne is big. At least so is Sydney, but fuck Sydney.
Am I right?
I don't even know her.
Yes, Stu of all people.
Very strange. Maybe there's some sort of cricket match that we're not privy to.
They're going to be there shortly. I wonder if it's going to come back to bite them or if they talk shit about Melbourne when they're not looking.
You know, like the most shit I've ever heard them talk is like about Donald Trump, maybe.
Go tell it on the mountain. Donald Trump and
cities.
Sydney.
Yeah. What is Sydney that bad? I like it.
I'm sure they would take Sydney over Donald Trump any day.
Yeah. I noticed that this is when Stu started signaling the Cavs to up the tempo during Joe Jam.
Yeah.
And Joe Jam was the first of four debuts. Yep. Four debuts that remained in the show.
Yeah.
The next one came right after this. 2.02 killer year. I never actually expected them to play this live. It just feels like Mycelium, like it's just a vibey song that they'll never play.
Well, also just because I don't like the Beach Boys.
I don't know that it's about those. Wait, which kind of Beach Boys do you not like?
The ones that are it, that are coming up. To be it is to be them coming up. Maybe those I'm fine with, but the historical, I like old bands, but not the Beach Boys. This is not what this is about, but I'm always upset when an artist that I love very much likes the Beach Boys, because I feel like I'm failing somehow. I should like them? Should I like them?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I only like Pet Sounds, and I don't know what else. Am I missing something? Is it only non-Americans really like the Beach Boys?
Oh, that could be. That's could a nice way to think about it. I hope that's true.
I mean, that's our personal experiences, is it not?
I'm going to say that has to be true.
Non-Americans and American idiots.
I dated a foreign exchange student in high school from Holland, and she was beautiful, and I was just such a little douche. And I've always chalked it up to cultural differences, that she just assumed that my awkwardness was Americanness. And so maybe that's why people like the Beach Boys.
It's coming up, Beach Boys. There was Stu did not play an actual flute in this. Someone was playing a synth flute, which was surprising and a little disappointing.
The young captain, the first mate, my ship's mate, and I scrutinized the video to try to see who was playing the quote flute unquote, the flute's a synth on the keyboard. We're pretty sure it was Cookie. There was an angle where we couldn't be sure if it was Lucas or Cookie, but it seemed like Lucas's elbow was too high to be playing the flutophone.
Oh, you gotta keep it.
So
I didn't know that.
That's my understanding. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was Cookie, but they are like playing something before we hear it.
Oh, they
right?
could be. Yeah, they could be looping, sampling and looping like that. It's possible.
I think that's right. So you wouldn't necessarily see it at the same time.
Yeah, I hadn't considered that, but that would make sense for some of this stuff, that it's being recorded and looped, and then they can move on to do other things with the same hand.
Yeah, like they make a sound, they send it only to their ear, they make sure that it sounds good with the overall composition before they let it loose into the wild.
I think that's right, and that sounds super stressful, but that's what DJs do, I guess. This was also... Most importantly, this was the time. This was when Stu put on sunglasses finally. I was worried for him.
God.
I can't stand looking at him.
His hair looks great. Am I afraid to say that because he won't shave it? Will he? I know he doesn't want me to. I feel like he doesn't want me to like his hair or to have feelings about his hair. And that he'll shave it out of spite if we like his hair too much.
Do you think maybe Sydney is the name of his stylist or, you know, barber?
Yeah, fuck her.
Yeah.
It seemed that he and Joey cut his hair last I saw.
Joey cut Stu's hair?
Yeah, Joey and Stu cut Stu's hair in Lithuania to the tune of Self-Immolate.
I think that was Lisbon.
Oh, I'm sorry. Lisbon. Well, then maybe you're right.
This led into Blue Morpho, another debut.
Blue Morpho.
I've been petitioning the band to debut this for the last 2 months. I mean, by petitioning, I mean, I put one post on social media that said that they should play it because they never have. And I just want to, the power of prayer, you know?
That's important.
Yeah.
Really held hands over the song and eventually they didn't read enough of your emails that they decided to go ahead and do it.
I just said it was a crime that they've never played it. Not that it's a particularly awesome song. I just wanted to hear it.
Yeah, it's great. Off this album that has... It's the only album that with a video for every song, probably. Is that possible?
Does it?
I think so. I think that's right. Which, for me, raised the important question, is Catching Smoke coming soon to a rave near you?
Yes
agreed.
Yes,
we all agreed.
Yeah.
Yes it is. I think
I'm
it
excited.
Has to be. God, I hope so. Me too. I know.
I mean, they have to basically pull out everything,
and they have to know that we all are excited about that because they don't read my emails.
I'm sorry, they read my Blue Sky apparently.
Your Blue Morpho Sky.
This led into Extinction, which features the first guitar work of the night.
My Cabin Boys' favorite song, First Mate, Little Captain.
Is it?
Yeah, Extinction.
Wow.
For sure. Yeah. Why Joey, I thought is? Being very, I don't know, but I think he associated it with the dinosaurs. He asked me if it was about the dinosaurs, and it sounded, you know, I was like, no, dude, it's about us, dude. And blew his mind. No, he didn't comment on it further. I think he was probably disappointed.
That it was about
Joey being
him dying?
About.
I wonder.
Oh, maybe that's why he didn't bring it up again. I thought it was a very Stewie guitar performance from Joey, actually. It was, at this point, less technical and more of a noisescape. Which, not that Stu can't do both things. Both guys can clearly do both things. Stu's a hell of a guitar player who doesn't tend to get credited as the main guitar player. But I thought that Joey was kind of doing that kind of work, making lots of feedback noises. And he didn't go to waving the guitar past the microphone like a theremin, as Stu is wont to do, but it sounded like that at times.
You gotta think that could happen, though, someday. I mean, he's playing the banana now. Maybe he'll catch whatever terrible disease Stu has that makes him not keep a guitar on his body.
Stu's been trying to make modular synth music on his guitar for years.
And with his throat singing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, what other parts of his life do you suppose are like that?
What else goes in that bucket of patch cables?
What's the sound of one Eurorack squelching?
This led to another debut, Butterfly 3000. This was the highlight of the show for me.
Ooh,
yeah. And this is where things got up to 1,888 million beats per minute.
1.21 gigawatts
of beats.
Fucking ferocious by the end. It was so hard. It was amazing. The walls were quaking here in the poop deck. What do you call a captain's house?
Yes, your house.
The poo-poo platter.
Yeah, and they did start off a little slower, and then they sped up, and it was cool. And I like those lyrics. I haven't put together the timeline, but it feels like when Stu had his first child. Is my guess. During COVID, perhaps, which is another reason they might have so many videos for this album, because they couldn't go anywhere. But yeah, the lyrics are about, like, you know, I hope I can teach you to be mostly happy. That's so interesting, that adverb there. I like it because, you know, there's going to be a limit and it's not always going to work out. And he talks about in that, I hope I can, what is the word he uses? Something like support femininity.
Wow, that's certainly how I felt having a young child. And I don't know if it was that way for him, but like, if our day was 50% good, we considered it a success, because children are terrible people at that age.
Well, I think he's singing to the child, not the partner. I hope I can teach you to be mostly happy.
It's not a cry for help.
It might be. Most of the songs are. I hope that I'm worthy of your love. I hope I am deserving of your love. I hope you can brush off the powers that be. I hope I can empower femininity.
Wow. Yeah.
Which is the kid's way. It's like, you know, we have these beautiful, meaningful, tear-jerking lyrics and then raging, like, solos and unts, unts, unts. It's what a great band.
Cheers, cats.
It can go the other way around, of course. Apocalyptic hellscape screaming into, we love you so much.
Yeah. Well, they know. They just want to remind us after they sing about being welcome to hell. I understand. Sometimes it's nice to have that reassurance. Yeah. You know, my youngest child, is much more accepting of Giz now that I've expressed to her that they're being silly a lot of the time. We watched the video for Gila a few days ago, and it made her laugh this time.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's good. Oh, that's a healthy sign for her.
Mm-hmm. And she wanted to watch it.
Yeah, we were just watching Detroit Acoustic Set recently, and it's just, there might be more banter than there is music in that show. And my son was very happy just hanging out with the boys being dorks.
No. Yeah. On the set list here was Flamethrower Outro. It was printed on the set list between Butterfly 3000 and A Grim Reaper. But I guess it was cut for time. Maybe Joe Jam took up more time than they expected. Grim Reaper was super a fun way to end the show because it's so lyrically dense and it's just a wild party. And after, you know, the crowd not singing along for most of the show, like, which is unusual because at the rock shows, you're singing along a lot. It was good to have a lyrically full closer, I think.
Fuller than ever. It was lyrically denser than it usually is, even as a lyrically dense song.
And before we talk about that part, Ambrose said at the beginning, quote, unleash the shrimp beast.
He certainly did.
Do you know the origins of the shrimp thing for him?
Is it because he's tall? I think so. I don't know. I thought that it was someone else's nickname for him, and I didn't know if...
It must be.
I didn't realize he wears it so proudly, but he does.
Unleash the shrimp beast, and so he was. Joey went back on guitar.
And Lucas left his battleship submarine dashboard to go grab the bass. Have you noticed that his side, the tuchus of Nathan, has more lights or something? It's got some, like, bigger... rounder buttons on Lucas's end, but maybe he left that end for the bass.
I wonder if he is like playing bass on the modular synth or something. I mean, they all have different, all their things do different things, you know. Class,
there was some offhand comment that Stu made a bunch of years ago that Lucas was the best of them on a keyboard.
Yeah, well, this is the same band that said that Kaz was starting a vocal podcast on teaching people how to sing.
Vocal technique. Fair enough.
Yeah. So it's hardly
true.
Which one?
Anything.
I kind of think that my guess, if I had to, I think Cookie is probably the best keyboard player, but I don't know.
He's the most prominent.
Yeah, he is. I think so. So what's the torture chamber? So Grim Reaper went in the torture chamber. There were lyrics printed on the side of the stage that Ambrose was reading off of.
Yes.
And we have those lyrics. Someone took a photo and posted them. And it's a lot. Is this a debut?
Yeah, it is. Torture Chamber's not. Black Market Bargain.
Call the morgue. They want to sell my organs. Black Market Bargains. Spinal cords. Quick postmortem. Pull the thread. I'm in over my head. Maggots creep. Cred's social status. Severed heads for the Severin leeches. That was just the first verse. What?
Awesome.
You love to see it.
Yeah. There's stuff happening. There's more music coming. The 10 Nathan albums are coming together, and one of them will be a rap album.
It's very possible. Like, yeah, is this the beginning of a new song? It's funny that it wasn't on the set list like that, because Joe Jam was, but this is a Grim Reaper with a ton of other lyrics. Nail me to the cross if you must. Nail me to the cross. Speaking out against the unjust. Nail me to the cross.
Swept away under the rug with the dust. Yeah. Christmas album. Christmas rap album. Same person, similar service. Satan. Saint Nick. Season's greetings.
That's good.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah, it was a lot. There was a lot of Beastie Boys, Intergalactic Planetarying. There was a bunch of Sabotage, some more Jacksonvillian Limp Bizkit quotes. And it was amazing. Gamby said a bunch of stuff to the crowd that we'll never hear again or have heard. Yeah, my highlight, because we sort of went past it, but it was set with the sax into Joe Jam, with Ambi still on the sax. But really, Grim Reaper was like a full Nathan rap album. So, I don't know. That's glorious.
How do you know when set concluded and Joe Jam started?
It just like super changed.
They changed
it
keys? Just,
you know, man. It just Sorry. Changed.
Did I
it song change
with my with my
there was like theory? A song change. I don't know. I don't remember now. It was clear to me that it changed. I think it was like there was a stop and a change in melody, I dare say.
I guess my peak moment was for me was for Butter. It was Butterfly and just how it sped up and just hearing that song for the first time live. Just it was awesome. The whole show was. I wish I could have been there.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it's like. So, you know, we've seen Nathan sets 30, 45 minutes live, and you know what it feels like with that low end. And right. I listened to this show a couple times, one with a good sound system and one through my AirPods. And I would encourage anyone who can to find the best set of speakers they can to listen to this Nathan stuff with, because with traditional instruments, you kind of get, you know what you're getting, and even the kick drum and the bass don't have that low of frequencies as they produce with Nathan. It will rumble whatever you got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I would love to have been there for that. I know that there were sounds that I didn't get to hear that you had to be there for, and I felt like Field of Vision was a preview of the depths that they were going to be hitting, the subterranean beats that shook your bones.
And there's so much more to come. We've only just begun.
Yeah.
Tour starts on Friday, Halloween, October 31st. We don't know if they celebrate. Do they know it's Halloween, as John Lennon would say? I don't know.
He did. I don't know. There's similar lighting to a rave show or a nice Halloween display. Manchester.
The next night in London, rave set. The next night in London, rave set. Take one day off. Come back on November 4th. For orchestra.
Back rave sets in London. That is crazy. How much material are we going to get? Are they going to play? What is the set list? What are the rules? What is anything? What's happening?
Three nights in a row. I mean, not just two nights. I've been to the UK. Right. It's a tiny place. I assume a lot of people will go to all the shows. I don't think they're going to have any repeats in the first three nights. So I think we're going to get some debuts.
We must.
Yeah, you're right. The first four nights, I guess. But for the first three nights are rave shows, and
right.
I am looking forward to it. What do you think it would be like to be at a 2+ hour rave show?
Depends. Am I drinking Red Bull?
Do you think you'd miss the traditional setup?
I don't know. I asked myself that during this show, and maybe it just... I guess if it's awesome, it's awesome. That's the thing. If I have a great time, it's awesome. And they tend to be really good at that. So some part of me is torn between wanting the rock shows. I want everything. And they tend to bring everything. They tend to bring this buffet of music in what we call a rock show, even though it's something much more than that. But I also feel like spending time in this zone is going to enrich this aspect of all the shows to come.
I agree. I just don't know how I would feel after three nights in a row.
Yeah, just what do you do even just to replenish serotonin or something? What are people are going to be wild?
Well, that's why they're doing it in Europe. They are much more practiced at this kind of thing and rehydrating and redosing, etc.
I think that's right.
Teach us your ways, Europeans.
Park in the wilderness yesterday, and two women passed me talking about the rave shows that they had been to, which was confusing. I don't live in Europe. And so I don't know, maybe it's all coming up Beach Boys nowadays.
Gonna have a lot of fun. Well, What's going to drown everyone? What's going to happen?
Drowned in their own serotonin.
So we're going to try to cover these shows as best as possible. Yeah. We haven't scheduled anything yet. This is impossible because they're only taking one day off at most. So we are going to have an episode about probably the first half of the tour and then the second half of the European stuff. That's our plan. Is that your plan? That's my plan.
Right. That sounds right. Yeah, I'm in. Let's try. The worst we can do is utterly fail.
No one's listening. So last thing, Omnium Gatherum, like random stuff. This is Giz related. I went to see Geese last night, which was really fun. They opened for Giz in 2024. They were opening for a few shows. They played in Portland last night. I saw a lot of Giz fans there. I talked to a bunch of people, some people that had gone to all the Pacific Northwest stuff in recent memory. Mm. It was really fun to see some weirdos.
Yeah. I just wanted to say the Forest Hills show, the orchestra show, dropped since the last episode. And it's great. And it sounds so good. And it was wonderful to hear a nice clean recording with video. I really like video. I love the clear recordings. I like to listen, but I get something out of having the video joined, and it was so much better. It was cool that they streamed that. It was cool that they streamed it live, but the audio was so much better. Maybe not perfect, but way, way better. And I loved that.
It was actually terrible during the live stream when they first performed. It was disappointing because it was the only orchestra show that was streamed, and it was insufferable. It was terrible.
Yeah.
And I thought
it was a real bummer.
I mean, I guess we all knew that they were going to release one at some point.
King Stingray was just on KEXP. Speaking of Giz related music, that was a very cool set. We watched that on the poop deck here and had a really nice time in the house on the big screen. And then Mrs. Captain and I went and saw a band that I think Giz fans would really appreciate called Castle Rat. And I would just say, treat yourself, especially if you can go live. I think they're in Belgium touring with my friend Jad, not Abumrad, in Blue Heron. But Castle Rat is weird and freaky, and there are costumes and themes and good music, and just put on a very, very entertaining show. So I recommend people to check them, especially if you can see them live. Their music is cool, but if you can see a live set, it is bizarre and fantastic.
Castle Rat.
Damn right. I'm not afraid to say it. With now touring with Blue Heron, although maybe they're done now.
European tour starts in a few days. We will see you.
Yeah.
Not really. We won't be watching you. All right. Ciao, baby.
Ciao, Bellows.
Thank you very much for your cooperation.
That was fucking sick.